Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Martin Doblmeier. He is the director of Spiritual Audacity, the Abraham Joshua Heschel story, which will air over PBS stations across the country in May. Locally, the film can be seen on our sister station, WGVU-TV, on May 16th. Right now, I'd like to give you just a sneak preview. This is a portion of Spiritual Audacity, the Abraham Joshua Heschel story.
On the front lines of the historic Civil Rights March in Selma, Alabama, standing along with Martin Luther King Jr., is one of the most remarkable religious figures of the 20th century, Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel.
I think they became friends, but more than friends, they became brothers.
He was the authority on the prophets, but on this occasion, he was the prophet.
Abraham Heschel is plucked from the fire of the Holocaust that will take the life of his mother and sisters. And in 1940, he arrives in America.
And he's already come out of this magnificent dynasty of rabbis that go back for centuries. He's part of a dynastic royalty.
He lived in excruciating ways with the reality that as the world and the family he grew up in was destroyed in Europe, most of the world was in fact indifferent.
Remember, in a free society, some are guilty, but all are responsible.
Over the next three decades, Heschel fights indifference through his vision of a God who seeks to partner with humanity.
To be in real connection to God was to be in awe and radical amazement at the universe that God had created.
And his love for the prophets of the Hebrew Bible who dare speak truth to power.
And Heschel taught that each of us has a choice to make. What side of history do we ultimately want to land on?
He was kind of a theological Hemingway. He wrote in short, pithy aphorisms of enormous power.
Heschel plays a pivotal role in reshaping the contentious relationship between Catholics and Jews.
But I also have to remind them that my being Jewish is so sacred to me that I am ready to die for it.
And he risks being in the forefront of the protests against what he believes is an immoral war in Vietnam.
My father was attacked for so many of the public positions that he took. My father wouldn't be quiet. No one could silence him.
I am an optimist against my better judgment. Somehow, I believe in God. And somehow, I believe and am convinced that he will have mercy and pity more than we deserve.
So, once again, we hope you'll be able to tune in to watch the entire film on May 16th. So let's continue our conversation with Martin Doblmeier, and let me tell you a little bit about him. Martin holds degrees in religious studies and broadcast journalism. Since 1984, he has produced and directed more than 30 films focused on religion, faith, and spirituality. Martin combines a lifelong interest in religion with a passion for storytelling. Over the years, he has traveled on location to more than 40 countries to profile numerous religious leaders, spiritual communities, heads of state, and Nobel laureates. His films explore how belief can lead individuals to extraordinary acts, how spirituality creates and sustains communities, and how faith is lived in extraordinary ways. A moment ago, I mentioned the luminaries of faith, Bonhoeffer and Dorothy Day. Those two have been subjects of previous documentaries of Martin that are now available for viewing on YouTube. We welcome once again to Common Threads, Martin Doblmeier. Hello, Martin.
Hello, Fred. Thank you for having me.
Certainly. So let's talk a little bit more about the person of Abraham Joshua Heschel and his deep, deep spirituality. A couple of things right off the bat. It said that awe, wonder, and radical amazement permeated his writings. Could you explain that for someone who is not familiar with his writings?
Well, it really starts in one of his earlier works written in 1951, called Man is Not Alone. And it's a fundamental belief that Abraham Heschel had not only for that period of time when he wrote that book, but really it's sort of stamped the entirety of his life to see God and to have in a sense of God's wonder and amazement. And he draws a line between two different ways to perceive of how you see other people and the world around you. One is the way, what they call the way of expediency, where you see everything as its ability to function and to serve you, to benefit you, or to be aware of the wonder and the amazement, the radical amazement, as he would say, of the creation that God has given us, both in the world that we see, the physical world that we see, and in the human beings that we are engaging. In some ways, this is not radically different from the writings and the thinkings of one of the people who was a mentor to Heschel, and that's Martin Buber, who wrote the classic book called I and Thou. And that's a book that really had great impact on me personally when I was even in high school. And I began to see that, you know, people, these kinds of writings were talking about you, the way you see others in that you encounter in the world means everything. Do you see others as a way to advance yourself, somebody that can be exploited and taken advantage of, or do you actually see a sense of the divine revealed in them? And that, I think, is really part and parcel of what Heschel was dealing with throughout the course of his life, that notion of awe and wonder, seeing the revelation of God in both the natural world that you saw around you and in particular in humanity that you engaged with.
Boy, that's so true about Buber. He played a profound role in the development of my own spirituality. And I can't remember whether it was high school or college, but I agree that that can change someone, that line of thinking.
Well, I was introduced to Buber in a high school class. I'm 16 or 17 at the time, and I'm sort of grasping that how will I now, not, and now I've sort of come out of underneath my parents' direction, and I'm trying to figure out how am I going to be looking at the world, seeing the world. And Buber was introduced to me at a time when I was very open to that, and it just stayed with me. I mean, I've carried that notion of seeing others either as a way to profit from or take advantage of or to benefit me, or do I really see them as God revealed in them? And that's shaped everything for me for the rest of my life. And Heschel is all part of that. He's trying to get at it in slightly different ways, using the same different kind of language and awe and wonder. But that's ultimately what he's talking about. Do you see the possibility that God is present in a divine way in the other person? And that's a sense of revelation.
It almost always hits me when I'm in the midst of a purely transactional relationship. That is to say, a clerk at a store, something, a very mundane experience, but in terms of how I treat that person, Buber is always nudging to make it a little more personal. Go on.
No, I'm just going to say, if you really accept fundamentally at your core the concept that that person that you are even having this momentary transactional relationship with is some way revealing the presence of God, even that small transactional relationship is done differently than if you simply see them as a way to sort of process you and you process them and you move on and move out. So that was the great gift that I got from Buber when I was in high school, and that's sort of been reignited with me again in engaging Heschel.
And Heschel writes about God searching for us, God searching for humanity, which sounds a bit paradoxical. Can you shed any light on that? This is a very anthropomorphic God, obviously, that we're talking about. How can God search for us?
Well, the notion of God searching for us almost sounds arrogant. I mean, there could be a sense of arrogance in that notion, that we are the ones that are sought after by God, which seems totally antithetical to what a lot of people are raised to believe. But I don't really see Heschel talking about that out of arrogance. What he sees is that we are commissioned. His idea is that we are commissioned every day by God, who loves us and cares about us and wants us to be part of this ongoing process of healing the world. One of the writers and thinkers in the film is a rabbi, Shai Held, and he says that God wants partners. God wants covenant partners in the world to help us do sometimes the most difficult things we can imagine in the transformation of the world, the healing of the world, tikkun olam, to sort of be engaged in the healing and making the world a better place than what we received it as. And I think that's pure Heschel. He understands that we are called to do something. If we really buy into this notion that God has his hand in the world, and that creation is an ongoing process, that we become part of that ongoing process. We have a role to play, an obligation. Something is asked of us. And that's, I think, at the heart of everything that Heschel was driving at.
Let's talk about Heschel's role in the creation of Nostra Aetate, the declaration of the Catholic Church, which just had an incredibly, it's unfathomable to even think about the change in the relationship between Jews and Catholics when that document came out. And so again, what did Heschel have to do with that document?
Well, it's 1962, and Pope John the 23rd is going to shock the world by inviting the bishops, the leadership of the Catholic Church from around the world, to assemble in Rome to begin the process, the long, tedious process of evaluating where the Church was and where it needed to be as it was engaging now in the modern world. And then for the next, till 1965, every fall, the bishops would convene again in Rome to hammer out documents that would actually help to reshape the Catholic Church and its relationship with not only the world, but also in particular, how it would engage with other faith traditions, even non-Christian faiths, how it was going to be present to those, because there was a sense within the Catholic experience at the time that the Catholic Church was the only way, the only path to heaven and to salvation. And the Catholic Church now is open to the notion that maybe we need to rethink this. Maybe other faiths have a value. Maybe other traditions have the possibility of being a source for us as Catholics to draw on, they would say. And so Heschel, because of his association with the AJC, the American Jewish Committee, was invited to be part of the formulation of a document that was called that became known as Nostra Aetate, Latin for "In Our Time," where the Catholic Church took on the hard role of accepting the fact that there was a 2,000-year tradition and history that was scarred by the notion of a sense of Catholics being superior, that Jews had missed the boat 2,000 years ago in denying the divine aspect of Jesus Christ, and that had to be rectified. And Heschel was part of that. And that was tough going for a number of years. And there were times at which the Catholic Church still wanted to have language in the document that would call for the potential conversion of Jews to the Catholic faith. And Heschel famously said, "I'm going to work on this document with you. I want to help you as a church, the Catholic Church, to be able to formulate a new document, a new perspective, but not at the expense of saying that you will eventually hold the hope that you will convert me. I would rather go to Auschwitz," he said, "than be converted and to give up my own faith." And that, I think, shocked many of the bishops when he actually said that line. When you look over the evolution of the process of the document, it went through many drafts, but the final document does not call for the conversion of Jews to Catholicism, but in fact calls for a sense of fraternal connectedness, brotherhood, unity, and an understanding of a mutual appreciation for the faith tradition of the other. And this has sent the Catholic Church, and I think consequently Christianity, down a very different path of how it was going to engage with other faith traditions now for the next half century.
Do we know what was the game changer? What was it that made them change or persuaded them to change that language?
Well, it's said that Abraham Heschel was part of the reason why. His strident sense that converting me should not be the goal of a full Catholic engagement, that's not the way to respect me as a Jew. And then the bishops at that, and when the final documents came around, it was an overwhelming vote, Fred, to say that we are not going to vote in terms of continuing language that hopes for the conversion of Jews. But let's now think in terms of everybody meeting on an equal footing, on an equal standing. And that has, I think, has had now 50 years worth of continuous growth and reimagining the potential for relationships between Catholics and Jews and Catholics and non-Christians, Hindus, Buddhists, Muslims. I was very moved in the fall of 2018 with the tragedy that happened at Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, when a shooter went in and killed many of the people who were at worship in Tree of Life. And the next day, Pope Francis came out with a public document that said when our Jewish friends are hurting as a result of these kinds of terrible, hateful behaviors, we all feel the suffering and the pain from it. I don't think that would have been a statement that would have been possible before a document like Nostra Aetate and the openness to people of other faith having a valued relationship with their God that we have to engage with fully and respect fully.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. My name is Fred Stella, and with me today is Martin Doblmeyer. He is the director of Spiritual Audacity, the Abraham Joshua Heschel story, which will air over PBS stations in May. Tell us about his anti-war activities. I'm gathering that he may have lost a few friends, at least at the beginning of this effort.
Well, if you mean the anti-war activities that were particular to Vietnam.
That's correct.
Yes, that was really something, Fred. This is in 1967 in particular. The war is escalating. This is before the famous documents that came out from Daniel Ellsberg that revealed to the nation how the country had been deceived about the actual engagement, the extent of the engagement of the war in Vietnam. So Heschel was way early on the curve about all of this. And in 1967, he took advantage in some ways of his friendship, personal friendship and trust with Martin Luther King Jr., who had recently won the Nobel Prize for Peace, and said that you have become widely acclaimed and celebrated, Dr. King, for your work in the civil rights movement, calling for justice for African Americans, rightly so. But your peace, your distinction as a peace laureate, a Nobel Peace Prize laureate, also could be used to leverage that authority that you have now to speak out against the war in Vietnam. And that's exactly what he was able to convince Martin Luther King to do. And in April of 1967, they all gathered, King and Heschel and a number of other prominent speakers at the time, in Riverside Church in New York. Huge cathedral-like church. And with an audience of thousands, Martin Luther King Jr. that night, at the urging of Heschel, came out with a wide condemnation of the Vietnam War. And I think in some ways that was a shot of adrenaline into the anti-war movement. Both King and Heschel, but King in particular, were castigated in the press right after that. This is totally wrong. King has no right to speak about this. He's way out of the bounds of his areas of authority. Let him stay to the civil rights movement. That's where he has authority, not in these kind of activities. And it was considered to be unpatriotic, un-American. And there was a lot of grief. And especially Heschel received a lot of grief because there were many people who were concerned that support from the United States to the fledgling nation that was Israel at the time could end, could dry up because of Heschel's condemnation of the politics of America at the time. And yet both of them decided that this is what they felt they were called to do. This was the prophetic voice that they needed to bring to that particular moment. And they did it, and now history looks back at that as a seminal moment in the anti-war movement.
Do we know what it was that encouraged him to speak out? He didn't know at the time that the government lied to us about Vietnam. So it looked like it could possibly be a just conflict. It wasn't technically a war, but it was a conflict. What was it that made him go, no, we should not be there?
Well, you have to remember that on one side back in 1967 was a real genuine fear of the rise of communism. And so most people who deemed themselves to be patriotic Americans wanted to thwart communism. But on the other side, too, there were many people who were just absolutely perplexed at how America continued to involve themselves in Southeast Asia to fight an enemy that we really couldn't understand. And Heschel had emerged already as such a prominent spokesperson in 1967 that he was one of the co-founders of an organization called Clergy and Laity United Against the War in Vietnam. Clergy and laity coming together, and he represented the clergy. And there were about 50,000 people who were part of that organization, including prominent names like William Sloan Coffin, who was a very prominent pastor, preacher, back in the 1960s. So there was already stories, rumors, news reports that are coming in about what America's involvement were. Like I said before, it was before Daniel Berrigan released much more details about the extent of America's involvement. But it was widely known what America was doing, and it was widely criticized, but not nowhere near the extent that would happen over the next number of years as more and more people of conscience became committed to the anti-war movement.
And in the remaining time that we have, Martin, tell us about his take on Israel and Palestine.
Well, I'm often asked, at the time that this happened in the 1948, the creation of Israel, it's widely reported how Abraham Heschel, like many Jews around the world, every Jew around the world, was absolutely convinced this was miraculous. Such a long time coming, and so overdue. Had there been a state of Israel, a free state of Israel in the 1930s, how Jews would have clearly had a place to go to as they were fleeing the rise of Nazism in Germany and later persecution in other parts of Europe where the Germans had taken over. So in 1948, when the creation of Israel happens, it was a godsend for people. And that's how it was perceived. Heschel dies in 1972. So he does not know he's not aware of all the changes that would be happening in Israel at the time, but certainly he believed that this was a godsend, and he was critical at the time of some of the activities that were happening, some of the actions that were taken by the Jewish army, in the ways that Jews would engage Palestinians, and he could be critical of that. There's a case where there had been a mass mass shooting in Israel at the time of Palestinians. And conflict was raging, and he was actually in his classroom at Jewish Theological Seminary, and he had heard the news about this and felt so distraught that he called the class off. So he had qualms about what was happening in Israel at the time, but when it was first declared its own independent state, he thought of it as just a miracle that it happened.
Yeah, I seem to recall him saying that, you know, it's something like, this is a paraphrase, it's just land. And I found that interesting coming from a devout Jew, because that land is so important to Jews. But obviously he was taking in consideration the challenges that the Palestinians were facing.
Yeah. Yes, no, that's a good point. Actually, the language that he uses is, we do not worship the soil.
That's it. You're right.
And what he was trying to say is he was trying to differentiate between the physical plot of land and a homeland for Jewish people. And I think that's exactly what he was trying to focus on. You know, he's so brilliant in the use of his language to make distinctions. So when he talks about the Sabbath, he talks about, as especially for Jews, this is a cathedral in time. We honor God through our use of time and not in space, not the creation of great spaces. So Heschel's really sort of holding on to this theme that of humanity versus the land, of time rather than space. So I think it's, in some ways, it's mystical. It sort of demands a lot of thought and a sort of going along with him as he tries to unpack some of these ideas. But I think he's really trying to break the boundaries of our traditional thinking, appreciating in this particular case the home of Israel as a home of a people versus not worshiping the land.
Martin, this is a very fascinating documentary that I really hope that people will take advantage of by watching it locally here on WGVU-TV on May 16th. And I want to thank you so much for your time today and last week as well.
Oh, this has been a pleasure, Fred. Thanks for your good questions and your interest in our films. It means a lot.
You're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today has been Martin Doblmeyer, and we're talking about the documentary Spiritual Audacity, the Abraham Joshua Heschel story, which will air over PBS stations in May. Locally, the film can be seen on our sister station, WGVU-TV, on May 16th. I'm Fred Stella. Please join us again next week here on Common Threads.